So this is going to be one of those talk it out episodes. I recently came across an interesting quote that was about this idea that projections are unconscious agency, whereas introjections are unconscious receptivity. And this stems from what I did in the last episode, which was diving into the stages model and diving into the three forms of shadow identified by Kim Barta that come up in this work: projections, introjections, and split ego states. Projections being what we are casting of ourselves out into the world, which usually is reflected in some sort of judgment in another person. Sometimes it can be a golden shadow, which is projecting envy, something we really love and appreciate about somebody, and lowering ourselves. So a projection is a quality about ourselves that we are placing outside of ourselves. Introjection is taking on a quality that isn't ours. So it could be a feeling, could be an emotion, could be a judgment, could be a talent, grandiosity, something that isn't actually attuned to us and our experience. That's an introjection. And then a split ego state is when at some point in our development, a trauma occurred, something happened where during our development, we were asked to basically be a different way and had to like almost pivot in our development in a way. And when that happens, our shadow either gets walled off, it's something that's just like pushed down and just doesn't come out, locked away, or is brought along with us in our development, something that is unconsciously operating in our lives as like almost this underlying unconscious growing in sophistication. I want to use the word insidiousness, but shadow is not necessarily insidious. It can be, but it's really just this earlier developmental happening that grew along with us and became a survival mechanism. You hear this in what are called survival strategies or attachment styles, things like that. And so with all of that in mind, I came across this quote in that research related to Kim Barta talking about projection being an unconscious use of agency and introjection being an unconscious use of receptivity, right? So one of the earlier best ways to talk about this is that he essentially mentions that at the 1.0 stage in the stages model, which is basically infancy to like 2 years old, when we are purely receptive, we are purely helpless and taking things in and essentially being receptive, that we can develop traumas, obviously, like with physical trauma or being around violence or being around or just being neglected or any kind of being told to shut up when you're crying, even though the baby doesn't understand the language yet. They can understand the tonality. They can understand the fear response, the aggression, and have a repression as a result of that. And so the 1.0 receptivity usually is the beginning of introjections. And because you're basically being told who you are and what you should be, right? You should be quiet. You know, if you're surrounded by a lot of violence, you should be afraid, you know, that kind of thing. And that ends up carrying throughout a lot of people's lives in various ways through assuming how people feel about them. And that gets into more complicated stuff that I'm not necessarily the expert on, but I thought it was really interesting to share when it comes to introjections and this idea that introjections are unconscious receptivity. So it's not being aware of what we're taking in from the world around us. And you know, we can relate this to trauma and stuff like that, but I also think about it as like what we're taking in terms of social media, or we're taking in terms of maybe watching a movie that we feel like we're adult enough to watch, something that maybe is like sexually explicit or graphically explicit, and not realizing how that's affecting our psychology or affecting our mood or affecting how we interact with people. And so the introjection is basically not realizing how what we're taking in is being taken in, like how that actually permeates through our mind and through our system. And so beginning to become aware of that receptivity and how that works through our system, that's the beginning of making that conscious. And just noticing like, oh, my mood changes when I watch this. My mood changes when I listen to this song. My attitude or thought process changes when I go on this social platform or when I see this person's post or whatever the case may be, or you know, see this thing on YouTube about different wars around the world, right? Awareness is very different than just like unconsciously taking in a bunch of stuff and not realizing how that's impacting us, right? I mean, you're an adult, you can take in whatever you need to take in, but there's a certain responsibility with knowing how that impacts us and affects our physiology and our psychology and our emotions and all of that stuff, right? So that's the unconscious part of that introjection. And then 1.5 goes into that projections territory, because at 1.5, you know, we were already doing the receptivity of being a baby and noticing the world around us and being helpless. And then you get to like 2 years old and, or 1 or 2 years old, up to about 5 to 8 years old almost. And you get into this stage of now you can actually like reach for things. You can touch things. You can grab them. You can go get them yourself. You've had enough experience with taking in the world that you're like, okay, this is what I need. And this is what I want. And I can go get those now. I can crawl. I can move. I can climb. I can, you know, it's not just about crying, though that still becomes a tool to be able to get some things that you want. But now you have an additional tool of physical active mobility. You can actively go get things, and you can climb on the counter and go get the cookies, you know, and take whatever you want, or snatch the phone out of your mom's hand. you know, then not something that any of us who is listening had that experience of really, but, you know, take whatever it is that is exciting in front of you. And it really is like this unconscious taking. It's just like, this is what I want, so I'm going to take it. And it's, there's no social rules yet. There's no really judgment of whether or not that's right or wrong. And it is the parent's job to start setting boundaries as that gets more sophisticated, as the wants get more complicated, as the impact of the child on the world gets bigger. The parent's job is to say like, no, you can't do that. Nope. You can't take that. Nope. You can't take that from that person. No, you can't do this. You can't do that. Otherwise those boundaries get very thin and the kid continues to just do whatever they want. And eventually that's about learning social acumen. That's about being able to trade and connect with people at that next 2.0 stage. Now the projections part comes in this stage because you're being very active in the world. And so your focus is very naturally outward. So you see someone else doing something and it's like, you're putting yourself out into the world. You're projecting yourself into the world. You see someone else that is taking something and you're still seeing it from first person perspective. So it's like, you know, it's like, it's I'm taking that. You know, it's the idea of not yet having theory of mind, where the child looks at the color of the ball, even though the color on the ball is different on the other side, and they turn the ball around and they still say the same color. I don't know if I said that right, but the idea is that what they see is what is real versus not being able to see what the other person sees. And so that's what happens in 2.0, is being able to have that ability to have theory of mind, to see that someone else will see and experience a different thing than what I'm experiencing. So that projection is projecting that their experience unconsciously is my experience, but I'm not seeing it as that. I'm seeing that as like a trigger. It's reflecting in my body as like, oh no, I'm doing that. But we get angry and say, they're doing that, you know? So that's where the projections begin. And this projection being an unconscious use of agency is such an interesting idea. You know, agency, again, being this like self-propelled self-authorship, this self-going and getting and making and creating and making happen, that self-agency is similar to the introjection, and like we're watching things and we're like taking in stuff. We're not necessarily realizing the impact of all of our actions. And so there's unconscious agency happening, and then the world reflects that unconsciousness back to us. And we don't realize that that's us creating that to some degree, or that's us doing something very similar to some degree. Like that's coming back and being reflected back to us in a way that creates a trigger, right? So it's something I'm still kind of ruminating on, but it's this idea of unconscious agency. Like for me personally, I think I have a lot of stuff here related to not realizing how much I am trying to take. I'm constantly trying to take. And it's not as if like we don't all want something from people, but there can be an assumption that the other person is always trying to take from us or always wanting something from us. I find myself getting annoyed when I'm asked to do something because I assume that either I can't provide enough value of what they're asking for, so there's a self-worth thing there, or that I am not providing, I'm already not providing enough, so that's why they're asking me for something. It's almost like a reflection of unevenness in the relationship, and so it feels like a projection of that. And I think for me, I'm starting to realize lately how much I think I'm unevenly taking or trying to take. Now, it's really hard in this season of life because like we are legitimately really trying to make some things happen, and desperation on top of all of that really makes it feel like I'm just trying to get from people, right? I'm trying to put out offers. I'm like, buy my stuff, get a subscription, do the thing, come on, you know, instead of doing what typically works in the 2.0 stage of reciprocity, which is give, 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 get, right? And so there's something in my own personal upbringing that I kind of missed there, I think. And I don't know that it's necessarily something that, that's like a blame thing that like my parents did or didn't do. I don't really know, honestly. If anything, it's me being able to continue to get what I want through personal mental trickery, being an introverted thinking person, an INTP in the Myers-Briggs system. I think I just subverted, you know, I just became trickstery and sneaky to the point where I didn't get caught. And if I continued to not get caught doing what I was doing, then there's no boundary to be set. You know, a parent sets a boundary because they catch you. You know, if you, for example, later in life cheat on someone and they catch you, like there's usually a consequence that you deal with. You take something from the grocery store, you get caught, then you deal with the consequence. Now, throughout my life, I've done all of those things and I have not gotten caught, quote unquote, like in the moment. And so that creates this continued feeling that I can kind of do and get away with whatever I want, which is kind of that 1.5 energy of like, take, 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 right? So I'm realizing that the boundaries never came up for me because I never, quote unquote, got caught, or I never made it. Yeah, I was putting all of my intelligence into being sneaky and not putting my intelligence into other things, frankly, not putting it towards, you know, social capital and connecting with people and all of that. So when I talked about in the last episode about this, and I talked about it earlier, this split ego state where you can take a developmental shadow or something that never really learned its lesson, and it kind of grows with you. That sort of 1.5 projection agency energy, that unconscious agency, me realizing that I'm being so trickery throughout, like I didn't realize how much that was carrying throughout my life. And it just became more sophisticated as I grew through life. I started to use social manipulation to get what I want. And then I started to manipulate a job. I started to manipulate some aspects of my college experience. Like there's all sorts of stories that I could apply this 1.5 energy to throughout my development that I'm kind of reckoning with, to be honest. And it also relates to an episode I did fairly recently about emotional boundaries, that to go from 1.5 to 2.0 is to learn boundaries. And I think one of the reasons I didn't learn the boundaries also is because I was exposed to like violence and sex and movies and stuff like that too young. And I think that had an impact on me. So moving into the 2.0 stage is where you start into get into theory of mind, and second person perspective is seeing that someone else, it's you and it's me. It's not just me, right? So there's another person, and I can have that conversation with them, and I can see that they see a different color if the ball is facing the other direction and has a different color on the other side. And starting to use that theory of mind to understand a different person's perspective. Now, the reason it's called a split ego state, and this is where it starts to form or can start to happen or can be the origin, or at least it's the beginning of that possibility, is because you have the ego development at 1.0. This is me. Me is very different than the spiritual I. That's a whole different concept. But me in the ego sense is me, like your baby, you know, the baby's like me, you know, and they're very excited about it. But then there's me and then there's you. Ooh, that's a whole different thing. Right. So there has to be the me that's holding on to me. And then there's the you that's holding on to the concept of you. Right. And that's where the split ego can happen, where the me, which is the earlier developmental stage, overrides the second stage. And then subsequently, in my case, would tend to override, especially in these like more sex addiction situations or situations where I was trying to manipulate situations to get what I want, this me, this like really super ego aspect of me would very much, you know, take charge, becomes the dominant ego state, right? So when you're developing different ego states, 1.0, 2.0, 3.0, etc., you know, there's usually the leading edge is the dominant one. It's the lead, you know, 2.0 in this case would be the leading one, or 3.0 or 4.0, depending on where you are in your development, would be the leading ego state. So quite literally, you're like a different person than you were before in 3.0 versus 2.0 versus 1.0. But they're still coming with you. It's like a nested dolls kind of situation where it's still you, but then there's like an encapsulated you underneath that one, and another encapsulated you underneath that one, and another encapsulated you underneath that way. But in my case, with the split ego state, it's basically saying that 1.5 was like, no, I'm the dominant ego. And it jumps in at various points, especially when there's a trigger that makes that happen. A trigger for me is either someone who's expressing intense anger, someone who is reflecting that 1.5 kind of anger ego state back to me. It sort of creates this, what Kim Barta calls a shadow crash, and crashes you down to that developmental state. And then that ego state takes over and becomes the dominant state. So with the 2.0, again, 2.0 is about, it's learning boundaries. It's the parent saying, no, you can't do that. No, you can't hit your sister. No, you can't just take cookies. No, you can't, you know, poop on the floor. like you have to learn these things. It's really interesting. If you watch the show Hoarders, there is this really good example of this in some of the episodes. Now, Hoarders is interesting. You can see the shadow crash happen for some people, so that they've had a full career, they've had a life, they've had a family, they've gone through development and then they had a crash back down to a earlier worldview where they become, you know, they develop this hoarding disorder. And then there are other situations where people go through the, they go up their development and then something happens. There was one example where someone was living in like rural West Virginia or something like that. And they lived with their parents and it seemed like their parents died unexpectedly at a pretty young age and they were left to fend for themselves. And they didn't have anyone else around them to socialize and reflect with to move them into that 2.0 stage. And so part of it is being able to socialize with people. And I remember at a young age, I did not socialize a lot with people. I had bullies next door. My older brother was around for a little bit, but then he left. There were just not a lot of kids around until I went to school. And then that was a whole awkward thing. I was bullied a lot too. So I think that that really increased that defense mechanism with the 1.5, you know, aggressive ego state of taking and wanting. And, the hoarder show is really helpful to see that, like, you know, they're the difference in someone who does a shadow crash versus going up and getting stuck there is usually the hygiene in the space. Like they're just like kind of pooping and peeing everywhere. They don't have a sense of like social niceties and hygiene and taking care of themselves, you know? So that becomes, a bit of a challenge for that happening. So the 2.0 stage is important for developing that, that sense of social niceties. And if there's a split ego state that happens here where you have trouble connecting with people and social niceties and all of that stuff, then of course you'll have a little bit of lack of trust. So in this case for me, I'm learning how much I'm more of a taker than a giver. You know, the 2.0 stage is also about learning reciprocity. It's training. You know, it's when it's that stage where you're, they call it rule oriented stage. And it's where you're like in the playing field with your kids and, or with other kids. And you're like making up games together. Everyone has a want, everyone wants to win. So you have to try to figure out rules to make it fair for everybody. And that's basically what the rule oriented stage is. It's like negotiating, it's trade, it's, common rules, it's common ideas, and it's trying to find a way to cooperate because the wants become different. It's not about stuff and it's not about pleasure as much as it is about wanting a friend. And, you know, I think I'm learning how much I want to put more effort into wanting a friend and wanting to be of service and wanting to genuinely give. And I think that's work for me right now, is paying attention to how beneficial it would be, ironically, to be more giving. You know, I was talking to Molly today about that too, where a lot of projects I've created, I'll put a lot of effort into building the logo and the scaffolding, the website, all of the details that I think are interesting, like tech stuff. And then when it comes to building the content, something that someone else is going to read, I get kind of stalled. You know, I get these little pushes of making a bunch of stuff. And that's what happened if you are subscribed here on Substack, dopamine.substack.com, that if you're subscribed, you saw that I was posting a bunch of stuff at once fairly recently. And that was sort of this like manic attempt to get that going again, to get myself into that giving state. But I was really giving to get. I was trying to push people to buy, you know? So I was being overly aggressive. And I think that backfired. I got negative feedback that was like, this is too much. And people started unsubscribing and all of that. And that happened on YouTube. And I started pushing too much. I started trying to sell courses too much. And I wasn't giving enough, you know? So there is this blind spot for giving my time, my attention, my knowledge, my expertise. You know, this podcast feels pretty good because like I'm able to provide, I'm talking about myself, but I'm able to provide hopefully some helpful insights from my own investigation and my own struggles and challenges. And, you know, it's more of a diary in that sense, but, hopefully there is value to you in bringing some of these models to you, especially the stages model, which is not very popular at all. It's just something that's mentioned in integral theory and sometimes spiral dynamics and stuff like that, that I think is, really, really useful, especially related to childhood trauma stuff. But, I'm not a therapist in any sense of the word, just a person who is self-investigating. And if you're doing any kind of self-investigating, especially with this early childhood stuff, certainly like approach it carefully and slowly. And if you have a therapist, work with them on this. I need to find one to really work on this stuff. But I think I've pinpointed for me that the work right now is to work on reciprocity and giving. And specifically, not only just giving, but noticing how I am assuming that I'm using that second person perspective to assume that the other person wants something from me all the time, because that's what I do. I want something from people. And I caught myself doing that recently. I thought it was an interesting note that Molly was mentioning, like, oh, you just need to go make friends. I was like, there's nobody here I want anything from. Like, that's a very revealing statement, you know? And it's a little weird and embarrassing to admit that. I feel kind of juvenile, like, or even like, I even feel a little bit of self-judgment, you know, like, am I like a bad person for being so selfish and so one-sided and all of that? Well, frankly, it's been kind of an unconscious selfishness. I just haven't realized it till now. But I think it's important to be, you know, kind of self-forgiving in all of this. Like, I can't move forward if I'm not accepting that this is the case and self-forgiving and kind of laughing about it a little bit. Like, oh, okay. I'm not as altruistic as I think I am. But it's funny because I've also asked, people have asked me to volunteer and stuff like that. And I'm just like, that's not really my brand of altruism. And, I don't know. I thought maybe that's just maybe that's a smuggle for me saying like, nah, because there's nothing in it for me, you know? So maybe volunteering, finding ways to offer my services in ways that are just about bringing my presence or a skill or something. And frankly, like, that could translate to making YouTube videos, that could translate to making, course offerings, but certainly doing it in a way that is, being generous with my knowledge and not just saying like, okay, I made 2 modules, that's enough, $59, you know, but like really giving value and some of that value is like also recognizing that I have value to give. You know, it might be, all of this might also be a smuggle for feeling like I don't have anything to give to anyone. So I have to manipulate to get, right? I mean, I'm having an emotional reaction, so that's probably true because it's, you know, if you're going to be offering and bartering and connecting and communicating with people and trading with them, you have to have something to trade. And if I don't feel like I bring anything of value to trade, to bring to the table, then why? And then I'm not going to feel like I belong. I'm not going to feel like I can contribute. I'm not going to feel like I can really make friends, you know, that I have to trick people. And I felt like that was the case for like intimate relationships too, for a long time. Like, I really felt like I needed to find the ways to swoon and woo and say the right words and play the long game and give gifts and, you know, do the whole thing where I'm basically just feeling like they may not feel this way, but I felt like in retrospect, like I was tricking them into dating me or spending time with me or wanting affection from me. You know, I would be suddenly very giving, but in an effort to get. So, you know, perhaps the work is to be more altruistic and to, you know, and I'm going to keep contemplating this in terms of how that manifests and, continue to notice the triggers that come up around, you know, when I'm taking and when I feel like someone else is taking, whether or not is that is true, and if I'm having triggers around that. And if I'm noticing this, hopefully I have fewer triggers around that, and that I can still be generous even in those circumstances, or I can set a proper boundary, because boundaries are what this is all about too. So this is going on for a while, but hopefully this provided some value or interest to you. I mean, it was good for me. I needed to just start talking. And so I just decided to record a podcast and share this insight with you. You can subscribe at dopamine.substack.com if you would like. Subscribe to the podcast. You do not have to pay for anything. You can if you would like to be generous and do that. That would be lovely. There's plenty of articles to provide you with support in your own self-coaching journey. If you have any topics that you would like me to cover, I'm frankly more open to being generous in terms of answering questions, to diving into like personality type stuff with Myers-Briggs, the Enneagram, any of these growth models, the stages model, spiral dynamics, integral theory. I just don't really know what people want to hear or what kind of questions you have. So please, if you subscribe on Substack and you get one of the emails, you can just reply to the email or leave a comment on Substack and leave a request for what you would like to hear and what you need help with. And I would like to be of service. And I guess that's the thing. I want to be of service. So I'm here. I appreciate you. My name is Christian Rivera, and I'll catch you next time on Dopamine. See ya.